I have Dr. Ben Singer on with us right now. He's a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Singer, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's nice to have you as well. So we've been talking a lot on the show today about masks, about vaccine. You've just heard Mayor Lori Lightfoot has just had a very long press conference about return to school for kids and what the protocol will be. Clearly all of this is predicated on the fact that we don't have a vaccine yet. And I know that that's an area of expertise for you. I'm wondering if you could spend a minute or two giving us an update on where we are, because the last I saw in news coverage, there seems to be as many as 5 to 7 promising vaccines that are in development all over the world.
Yeah, I think that's a good word to use, promising. So we have a lot of data from initial studies. Of course, there's a huge amount of laboratory work done in test tubes, done in animal models that have now moved into human trials. And a lot of these early human trials do a couple things. They really seek to understand what kind of dose of the vaccine, so how much of the agent that goes into the body is needed to create an immune response that we think will be protective against COVID-19. And then also work to find a dose that does that effective part of the vaccine, but also appears to be safe, that doesn't have overwhelming side effects or things that would limit the ability to roll out this vaccine in a safe way, in a big way.
We also just saw news that Russia was trying to steal COVID vaccine information, or maybe the vaccines itself, the ones that we're talking about now. So there's just been a whole lot of emphasis on this idea, because the world is really waiting to get back to some semblance of normalcy on a vaccine.
Yeah, that's right. And because of how easily this virus spreads, that is the way forward, is to try to get enough of the population. It has to be a significant level of vaccination in the population to really curtail the spread of the virus and get things back to normal.
Right. And that's really, it's so important. And when I think about, you know, these kids going back to school and how they really, they're trying so hard to get kids back in school, and yet everything is dependent on that, right? We joke, right? I have two of my own. I don't know if you have any, but they're just virus delivery devices, right?
Yeah.
they're the ones you always get sick from, your kids. They come home with
something,
and you're like, oh God, now I've got the sniffles. It just feels like this is not, no matter how much of a precaution that they take, whatever the protocols are, some kid's going to have to go to the bathroom at the wrong time when it's not their turn, and who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, and there's so much to this conversation, and it's something that, you know, is probably for a different day, but, you know, there's always balancing the risks of keeping kids out of school. You know, there's so much benefit to kids going to school, with the risk that you talked about of having the virus circulate within schools, bringing it home to parents. Of course, you know, young kids, they are virus delivery machines. You know, I think all parents of young kids who go to school or daycare know that, you know, they're always bringing things home. But at the same time, you know, we've never seen what can happen when there is adherence to masking and enhanced sanitation precautions and all the emphasis on everything that that we know now about the best ways to try to curb transmission of the virus. And so it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this goes forward.
As you look at where we are today, you know, what are some of the things that you're focused on with regard to COVID? And what are you seeing with your patients? What are you seeing in the hospital, in research with your colleagues? You know, where do you think the most promising things are happening?
Right. Well, like we talked about, the end game, the long term, is a vaccine that will be able to safely immunize a large segment of the population against the virus, so that when the virus, you know, infects a person and that person goes out into the world, it has nowhere to go because it only encounters people who are immune to it and can't mount an infection that they themselves can transmit. That's really the end game. Until then, what we're left with are really social measures. So the things that have been shown to work over and over again now are social distancing, adherence to masks, hygiene, hand washing. These are critical things. And then being able to sustain a surge like we saw locally here in Chicago just a few months ago, you know, through March and April, maintaining that hospital capacity and the ICU capacity to be able to handle that if we are unlucky enough to have to go through it again.
You know, I think that Florida is just about 95% capacity for, is that right? And where else?
Yeah, and that's right. And that's right. The states in the South are having these enormous surges. And that's really what we want to avoid getting to here in Chicago and in Illinois. You know, we had quite a surge earlier on in the pandemic, a little bit later than some of the other centers on the coast. But surge nonetheless, and I think we learned a lot about the care of patients, particularly in the hospital and in the ICU during that time. But we'd really favor not having to do it again if we don't have to.
Yeah, I can imagine that you see these doctors and nurses coming out of there, and they look like they've been through a war zone, and frankly, they probably have been.
Yeah, no, it's really amazing to see everyone come together and take care of patients for as sick as they are and for as many as there can be during these times of surge. And you know, the analogies to a battlefield and war are probably overdone. I mean, you know, we're trying to just do our job the best way that we know how to take care of people who are really, really sick.
And on that, it's interesting. We had some different callers call in. You know, people are on every side of this. You know, one caller earlier today said, well, why don't we just all get it now and then we'll have it and we'll have antibodies and then it'll be over? Why not? You know, why are we trying to push this out? I know intellectually the answer is because the hospitals won't be able to care for everybody. But with the death rate going down, it seems like critical care has become better at you know, better what to do, to how to take care and get people through this.
Yeah, there's so much to that question. So the first thing is, you're right, we could not be able to sustain that level of people coming in all at once, right? If there was just kind of a, you know, a free-for-all, everybody tries to get it at once. It would mean a huge number of people die unnecessarily. The places in the United States and the places in the globe that have had very, very high death rates are the places that get overwhelmed and that really strain their resources to effectively care for people. And we're starting to see in some of the places you mentioned, like Florida, Arizona, and some of the other states that are encountering these resource limitations and these surges, their death rates are now starting to go up. And death, unfortunately, is a kind of a lagging indicator because people can live in the ICU for a while until their bodies finally give out, even though, like you said, we have many ways to care for people and to really give them the best shot in the ICU.
Dr. Singer, we have to take a quick break. Would you stay with us for a little bit? And we'll come back. I have a couple of more questions for you.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
All right, thank you. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more. We've been talking with Dr. Ben Singer. He's a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. We've been talking about vaccines. Dr. Singer, thank you so much for staying with us during the break. So to go back to where we were earlier, we were talking about vaccines. And, you know, in the newsroom, we were talking a little bit about, would you be the first or last person to get a vaccine? I asked my sons this question as well, and I'll tell you in a moment what they said. But how do you feel about that? How do people feel about volunteering to being part of the testing for this, knowing that their lives could be on the line?
Yeah, it's a really fair question. And as a healthcare provider, almost certainly I'll be one of the first ones once a vaccine is available, you know, to be offered it, because of course we're a vulnerable population working to care for these patients. You know, you mentioned the testing phases, and I think that it's worth talking a bit about them. So the initial phases, this is the phase one and phase two. This is trying to figure out the dose of the vaccine, some of the initial safety for these doses of the vaccine, and then whether it develops into an immune response. And what we're seeing now are these so-called phase three trials. These are trials in hundreds, thousands of people to give them what is thought to be an effective dose that is safe, and then look at what we call its efficacy, which is the real world acquisition of the virus. How many people with or without the vaccine go on to get the virus? And we're going to know so much about the vaccine from these trials because, again, they're performed in thousands of people. We're going to know so much more about how effective the vaccine is and how safe it is. And so people really can use that information to make an informed decision as they think about getting the vaccine once it's gone through the FDA approval process and then offered to the public.
So you're going to be among the first to have it. Why do you think, I guess we don't really know a whole lot about it, but there are these five different promising approaches. Have you looked into how these approaches are different from each other, or did different scientists around the world just sort of happen on the same approach?
Yeah, there is a lot of technical stuff that goes into vaccine development. What we're seeing now is a lot of very exciting technology that you may have heard about, so a so-called mRNA vaccine and some of these other related types of technologies. These are really exciting because once you find the right dose that's safe and effective, you can create hundreds of thousands of doses, millions of doses quite quickly. It's really amazing how quickly an mRNA vaccine could be ramped up. And that's what we're really going to need in rapid fashion to be able to curb the pandemic.
Yeah, I can imagine that we'll need 7 billion doses right away.
Yeah, now, that's the idea, right?
And then sort of the last question is, of course, that, you know, whenever you have vaccines, they used to be these kinds of medications were always tested on men. And it turns out that women have a very different response sometimes to vaccines, and to medicines. And what about children who also need different doses based on size and age and level of development? And how does that all roll out? Because you can't do everything all at once.
That's right. And that's a hugely important point. So just backing up to the disease itself, we know that men versus women have different risks of developing severe disease. We know that children versus older adults versus the elderly have different risks of developing disease. So there's clearly differences in how our bodies respond to the disease itself. And so it stands to reason, of course, that the immune system of each of those categories of people would respond differently also. And so it's my hope that in these large phase 3 trials, that there's broad inclusivity across men and women, across ages, across all different walks of life in order to really understand what the most appropriate dosing, efficacy, and safety is among each of those groups. And then once we finally have a vaccine, ensuring that there is an equitable way to disseminate it through our society so that everyone has access to a safe and effective preventive for COVID-19.
It all takes time. And normally, and we heard Dr. Fauci say this, I know infectious disease specialists myself, doesn't it normally take 5 to 10 years to come up with a vaccine?
At least. And so this is happening on, you know, what has been called the warp speed, right? This is what's happening on a really accelerated trajectory. And it's amazing science to try to do this very, very quickly. And of course, at great expense. To, again, establish the things we've been talking about, which is a safe and effective vaccine that can be disseminated widely.
Do you feel like you'll be able to trust the science? Not that you don't trust science, you're a scientist, but, you know, that it could go this quickly and still be okay for everybody.
Yeah, so, you know, we're going to learn a lot. We're going to have to really pay close attention to these large trials. We're really going to have to dig into the data to try to understand all of the nuances. And it doesn't stop there, because as different groups begin to get the vaccine, this is, of course, all hypothetical, but once the vaccine is introduced, there's something called, you know, the post-marketing surveillance, where we look at, say, the million people who get the vaccine so that we can find very, very small signals in the data that might suggest that one group is more or less likely to respond or more or less likely to have side effects, those sorts of things. And so that's the great thing about science, is that it's dynamic. It's that with new data, we continuously revise and have new understanding of how we think about things.
Dr. Ben Singer is a pulmonary and critical care specialist at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Singer, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Be well.